We are following a developing situation in Annapolis where there's a large police presence at an office complex that's near the Westfield Annapolis Mall. Let's get the very latest from WTOP's Kate Ryan.
That's correct. Anne Arundel County Police Lieutenant Ryan Frazier has confirmed that they are working an active shooter at 888 Best Gate Road in Annapolis. We don't know much more than that. The Baltimore Sun is reporting that that building houses the Capital Gazette and that they have reports that they are following that there was an active shooter there in those offices. Again, we are working to confirm that.
Staff at the Capital Gazette newspaper tell the Baltimore Sun the shooting was in their building.
We're going to be here for the long term.
Has anyone been injured? Is anyone in custody?
Yep, I can't confirm injuries. I can't confirm whether anyone's in custody at this time. All I can tell you is that we do have that active shooter incident. We're currently clearing the building now, making sure that it's safe.
Anne Arundel County Police Lieutenant Ryan Frazier expects more updates pretty quickly. Family members of those at the building are being asked to meet them at the Lord and Taylor there. And Sean, we've been watching some of this unfold on video, and mm-hmm. there's a huge police presence. People, as you mentioned a little earlier, coming out with their hands in the air and being directed away from the building.
And to give you a sense of what these people have been experiencing, Phil Davis, who is a sports and crime reporter for the Capital Gazette, tweeted earlier, "There's nothing more terrifying than hearing multiple people get shot while you're under your desk and then hear the gunman reload." A very chilling account. Again, this is a continuing situation. We do have a reporter on the way. And as soon as we get a confirmation of anything beyond what we've been able to tell you, we will let you know.
WTOP's Michelle Bash joins us from the scene live with the latest. Michelle, what do you see and what do you know?
Well, as we've been saying, as you've been saying, there is a huge police presence here from numerous agencies. Media is set up in a certain area. That's where I am now. We were briefed a short time ago by Anne Arundel County Police, and they are promising an update in about 10 or 15 minutes. But here's what we know so far. This all began. The call came in to police around 2:40 this afternoon. They responded to a building at 888 Best Gate Road. This is right near Westfield Annapolis Mall. The report was an active shooter situation. Now, police believe there is one single shooter. That's the theory they're working on at this point. They are still continuing to evacuate the building, trying to secure it. There are injuries, as you mentioned at the start of this report. Police will not detail the extent of the injuries or the number at this point.
I'm County Executive Steve Hsu of Anne Arundel County. We've had a terrible shooting incident here this afternoon. There are several people who have died from this incident, and several others are injured. Those who are injured have been transported for medical care to Anne Arundel Medical Center and to Johns Hopkins Shock Trauma. Those fatalities are so sad. And I don't know what to say other than our thoughts and prayers are with them and their families, and we take comfort knowing that they are in God's embrace. The shooter is in custody and being interrogated at this time. I want to commend the public safety professionals who were very quick to the scene here within about 60 seconds.
This just in to the WTOP newsroom.
The breaking news out of Annapolis this afternoon. We've now just learned that 5 people are dead. Several others are injured after a shooting at the building which houses the Capital Gazette newspaper on Best Gate Road in Annapolis.
This happened on Best Gate Road, which also houses medical offices. Lieutenant Ryan Frazier is with Anne Arundel County Police. He says the suspect is in custody.
At this point, we're still talking to the individual, we're engaging the individual, and we're trying to find out a motive, you know, all those things that comes along with these investigations. So it takes a long time.
While police aren't saying where exactly the shooting took place, a Capital Gazette reporter tweeted once he was safe that the gunman opened fire on people in his office through a glass door.
Good morning. One of the organizers of that violent white nationalist rally in Charlottesville last August wants to hold another rally this summer, and this time he wants to stage it right here in the nation's capital.
Labeled a white civil rights protest, the rally is being planned for Lafayette Square across from the White House on August 12th, the one-year anniversary of the deadly Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, where Heather Heyer, a 32-year-old woman, was killed when a man drove a car through a crowd of counter-protesters.
afternoon, Unite the Right now has its permit to demonstrate downtown this weekend as expected. But white nationalists on the mall will be met by counter-protesters who've also gotten a green light to be there. WTOP's Megan Clougherty reports the city says it's ready.
On Sunday, we know that we have people coming to our city for the sole purpose of spewing hate.
Standing in front of the faith leaders of the district, Mayor Muriel Bowser outlined their plan to unite the love in response to the white nationalist rally scheduled Sunday. Police Chief Peter Newsham says there are no identified threats.
The Unite the Right demonstration is permitted to occur in Lafayette Park, which falls under jurisdiction of the U.S. Park Police. However, upon their arrival to the city, MPD will monitor the group and bystanders to ensure that safety is maintained.
The exact tactical strategy has not been detailed, nor has the route. Newsham expects the pro-white ralliers' travel plans to fluctuate, but says they'll be monitoring the situation in the days leading up to the rally. Megan Clougherty, WTOP News.
And a day before the anniversary, a remembrance has been held in Charlottesville. At the University of Virginia, many gathered to honor those who lost their lives when a white nationalist rally turned violent last year. Counter-protester Heather Heyer was killed when a man drove into a crowd, as well as two police officers when a Virginia State Police helicopter crashed. UVA President Jim Ryan offered the words of South African President Nelson Mandela.
People are not born with hatred in their hearts, but instead must be taught to hate.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We prepare for dozens of protests to take place across the district today. And as we do, the crowds are growing in Lafayette Square, where one organization hopes to send a strong message to the Unite the Right protesters.
No fascist USA!
It's a message Brian Becker, the national director with the Answer Coalition, is standing behind.
You're not welcome in Washington, D.C., and in fact, not welcome anywhere in the United States.
With anti-Nazi and KKK signs lining the sidewalk, the Answer Coalition is hoping to see a growing presence out here in Lafayette Square throughout the day.
We're going to have many thousands of people here today, and even that is a small fraction of the majority sentiment that really doesn't want the Nazis or the KKK to pretend that they speak for the people of America.
The group will begin their counter-protest at 1 this afternoon, and we'll also have protesters in Farragut North and McPherson Square. Melissa Howell, WTOP News.
Good morning. A heavy police presence paid off, and rainy weather likely helped too as protesters and counter-demonstrators rallied yesterday in the district. White supremacists were greatly outnumbered. They arrived early, finished their demonstration, and left before the event was even scheduled to begin at 5:30.
I got them old tank diddle blues.
All day, people have been coming by to express their shock, including some of the musicians who've played here.
So many musicians counted on this place to play, and they played for tips.
You're hearing the call of one of only about 700 whooping cranes left in the U.S. and Canada. These two are part of the captive-raised population at the U.S. Geological Survey Patuxent Wildlife Research Center in Laurel.
That's pretty darn cool.
Along the 19th mile of the Marine Corps Marathon on the National Mall,
Jimmy! Anyone named Jimmy?
The Neufeld and Fallone families of Long Island and Reston.
Jimmy is related to us, but we've never met him before. He's the son of my mom's cousin.
Near Chain Bridge, I found people playing ice hockey, some with all the proper equipment, and others.
We grabbed some sticks and played hockey with a puck we found.
11-year-old Zaku Wooten was playing with her 10-year-old sister.
It took only a couple of hours after it went viral for police to arrest the woman they say was caught on video smashing a bus window, and then a few minutes later, repeatedly hitting a man with her car.
That's all man.
It happened here along Bladensburg Road, just south of New York Avenue, Thursday evening.
Two small blankets, $10 a bill.
Salesmanship is a big part of the job of auctioneer, and 79-year-old A. Jack Downen of Williamsport, Maryland, loves the work.
Oh, we got two shares now. $10, $10, $10.
Only Philly natives at WTOP were invited to this taste test. First up, sports reporter Jay Brooks.
Really is close to the real deal. This cheesesteak did the job.
The sandwiches arrived frozen, and our testers reheated them in their home ovens.
They arrived here by limo at Reagan National Airport to a crowd of supporters.
Yep, there's a lot of people.
people to see me.
9-year-old Caitlin from Waldorf has gone through 20 surgeries, including a liver transplant. Where are you going?
I'm going to Disney World.
And what are you excited to see there?
I love characters.
Let's go, Cats! Let's go, Cats!
You win some, you lose some. This game was critical, though, and shocker, Caps fans were elated with the result of Game 2 here in Sin City.
It was amazing.
It's unbelievable. It's the first Stanley Cup Finals win in 42-plus years of hockey in D.C.
I had a blast. I've been waiting 20 years to see the Caps win a Stanley Cup game. And everyone in red can't wait to rock the red at home Saturday. In Las Vegas with the Caps, Brendan Hazelton, WTOP News.
I'm Michelle Bash at the Capital One Arena Watch Party.
Best day ever!
As the game ended, a Stanley Cup champions banner was unfurled on the basketball court, and confetti rained down as fans erupted in cheers.
I had the ticker tape parade. It fell. It was awesome. I loved it.
It feels amazing.
Awesome! I was born in 98. We lost 98, 28-2. We finally win it. So I've been waiting 20 years all my life to finally get the cup.
Yes. The party continues in downtown D.C., tens of thousands rocking the red for the Stanley Cup champion Capitals. The parade has now made its way down Constitution Avenue to the site of the victory rally. WTOP with a team of reporters around the area covering this historic day.
Let's start with WTOP's Christy King on the National Mall, which is not only jammed with Caps fans, it's also filled with people on their lunch break who really wanted to take part in the celebration.
Caps rally rocking now. We're on the mall at 9th Street, the Smithsonian Carousel. Office workers popping out for lunch in a pink blazer. Talk to me.
I'm here to support the city of D.C. with his first Stanley Cup.
Pinstripes, button down.
New in town. I just wanted to come down and see it.
Oh, rocking the red. Fellow office worker knows how to get into the spirit.
D.C. all the way.
Nice lunch break, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely. Go Caps!
On the mall, Christy King, WTOP News.
And WTOP's Neil Augenstein is in the crowd as well.
It's the moment these Capitals fans have been waiting for, some for several hours, others for several decades. The Caps taking their victory lap down Constitution Avenue on top of double-decker buses. They wave, the fans wave back, and all celebrating what it feels like to finally have a Stanley Cup championship team.
Every year, 20,000 people across the country need a stem cell transplant in hopes of winning their battle against cancer. With only a 1-in-4 chance of a family member being a match, cancer patients count on strangers to help. WTOP's own Jenny Glick got that call and shares her experience of donating her stem cells to a man she never met.
Just squeeze that for me, please.
It's a Wednesday morning in December, but not a typical morning for me. I'm at Georgetown University Hospital getting prepped to give a stem cell donation to a 52-year-old stranger.
What are we doing here? You're putting in
the return line and also drawing blood at the same time.
7 years ago, I gave a random swab at a community center for a stem cell donation. Around 6 weeks ago, I got the news I was a match. I've had blood tests, a physical, and 5 days of shots to get to this point.
We're going to pull out the blood from your arm on this arterial site. We call it the arterial site. It goes to the machine, and it goes back to this arm for your IV is.
Dr. Karina Gonzalez oversees the collection.
The stem cells are the what we call the buffy coat. That is taken by the machine automatically and goes right here all the way up to the bag, and we keep collecting continuously.
I cannot move or go to the bathroom for 6 hours, but Gift of Life has sent a Goodwill ambassador named Lindsay Katz to cheer me on.
Our registry was founded by Jay Feinberg, who's a bone marrow recipient. So his life was saved by a bone marrow transplant. And because of that, he likes to make sure that all of our donors feel appreciated.
Cats gave me gift of life socks and a large cozy orange blanket. I learned many people don't donate because it takes time out of your schedule and you can get flu-like symptoms, which I did. And of course, there's the fear factor, something I experienced and apparently did not do a good job of hiding from my kids.
So I know that you had to deal with big needles and that you got a little scared.
You were scared for me?
Yeah.
Why were you scared for me?
Because I was worried that you were going to faint because of the big shots.
Well, the night before I had this dream that you died giving stem cells. So yeah, I was a little nervous for you.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that.
I did. I didn't want to freak you out.
I was admittedly nervous, but I knew from Dr. Gonzalez that it can be tough to find a match.
Not everybody has siblings, and it's only 25% chances. So we resort to people that are unrelated.
Throughout the procedure, I kept in mind Lindsay Katz's words.
This is physically saving somebody's life and rebooting their immune system and giving them a second chance and the gift of life.
Heading home on the train after the procedure, I felt hopeful that I helped someone, grateful to have gotten through it, and happy to have set a good example for my kids, who later told me,
I'm very proud of you for doing that.
I'm proud of you.
Oh, kiss.
Jenny Glick, WTOP News.
With help from many Democrats and independents in Maryland, Republican Governor Larry Hogan won re-election, defeating Ben Jealous, his Democratic challenger.
Thanks to you, I just became the second Republican governor ever re-elected in the entire 242-year history of our state.
The governor thanked supporters as well as his opponents, saying Ben Jealous has his respect. Hogan, who has distanced himself from President Trump, also said his re-election sends a loud message to Washington.
The people in our great state voted for civility, for bipartisanship, and for common sense leadership.
In Annapolis, Michelle Bash, WTOP News.
In the hotly contested Northern Virginia congressional race, Democrat Jennifer Wexton has turned the 10th district blue, beating Republican Congresswoman Barbara Comstock.
Virginia State Senator Jennifer Wexton thanked her legions of supporters for helping her make the jump from the General Assembly to Capitol Hill.
You made it happen when you gave your time and your treasure and your passion to this campaign. And that is why I stand before you tonight as your Congresswoman-elect.
Governor Ralph Northam turned up to offer his congratulations.
You know, the blue wave that was started in 2017 continues to roll across Virginia.
In victory, Wexton says Americans deserve a nation where children are safe from guns and people get the health care they need. Dick Uliano, WTOP News.
Meantime, Senator Tim Kaine says his re-election is a rejection of division highlighted by the president, but his opponent Corey Stewart has no regrets about his pro-Trump campaign.
Virginia showed who we are and who we aren't.
Senator Kaine didn't mention President Trump by name, but the former running mate of Hillary Clinton praised voters for rejecting messages that he says are aimed at dividing the country.
You rejected in a very clear way in Virginia the politics of division and hatred.
Kaine's Republican opponent, Corey Stewart, ran as a big backer of the president and his policies. He says he knew he had an uphill political battle, but told supporters,
you know something? I got to tell you, I don't regret a thing.
In Northern Virginia, Mitchell Miller, WTOP News.
Glad you're with us, and sorry to report the government is shutting down. Parts of it are shutting down at midnight. That's because the House has adjourned for the evening. Details on some of what happened today from WTOP's Mitchell Miller on Capitol Hill.
The Senate had kept up some hope by moving ahead with a vote for debate on a new short-term spending plan, but it didn't come together quickly enough. The House adjourned, and the Senate halted future votes for the evening. Senators did approve legislation backed by local lawmakers to ensure that federal workers will be paid for whatever wages they lose during the shutdown. Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen.
Federal employees should not be punished by the shutdown.
About 400,000 federal employees are expected to work without pay during the shutdown. On Capitol Hill, Mitchell Miller, WTOP News.
The government is partially shut down this morning. President Trump tweeted a video demanding border security and blaming Democrats.
We're going to have a shutdown. There's nothing we can do about that because we need the Democrats to give us their votes. Call it a Democrat shutdown. Call it whatever you want. Let's get out. Let's work together. Let's be bipartisan. And let's get it done. The shutdown hopefully will not last long.
If you have any questions about the shutdown, head to our website, WTOP.com.
Visitors or anyone else hoping to visit one of the nation's monuments should plan ahead.
Here at the World War II Memorial, visitors are still welcome during the shutdown. Other open-air memorials are also open today.
Lincoln Memorial, Martin Luther King Memorial, those areas will be accessible.
But Mike Litteris with the National Park Service says visitors may notice porta-potties lined up outside the memorials. That's because staff is furloughed and many services aren't available.
Restrooms will be locked. Park rangers won't be there to do programs or provide information.
Other historic buildings will be closed altogether.
Like Ford's Theater and the Belmont Paul Women's Equality National Monument, those areas will be closed.
So be sure to plan ahead before visiting any sites here in the district. Melissa Howell, WTOP News.
Now, the government may be shut down, but one local business is opening its doors to furloughed federal workers in a rather unique way.
Hello. Hi.
Danielle Romanetti, the owner of Fiberspace in Old Town Alexandria, knows that government shutdowns can unleash the jitters in families waiting out the uncertainty of interrupted work and paychecks. So her shop is offering free knitting lessons to federal workers and contractors during the shutdown.
The act of moving your fingers over and over again and creating something is incredibly soothing to the mind.
In 2013, her store was packed with furloughed workers.
There's a whole host of them that probably never knitted again, but during that 2.5 weeks, it was a welcome stress reliever.
In Old Town Alexandria, Kate Ryan, WTOP News.
With less than half an hour now until 2019 arrives here in the nation's capital, President Trump says he wants to negotiate an end to the shutdown.
I'm ready, willing, and able. I'm in the White House. I'm ready to go. They can come over right now. They could have come over anytime. I spent Christmas in the White House. I spent New Year's Eve now in the White House. And, you know, I'm here.
The president speaking there on Fox News Channel's All American New Year. Mr. Trump says he wants Democratic leaders Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to hash out a solution. He is still insisting any deal include funding for his border wall. Democrats are still saying that's a no-go.
When rioting erupted in D.C. after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. 50 years ago this week, more than store windows were shattered. Some families are still struggling to pick up the pieces a half century later.
WTOP's Brennan Hazelton has more as we continue our special series, D.C. Uprising, Voices from the 1968 Riots.
At least 4,000 National Guard and federal troops are in this uneasy town tonight.
At our age, we didn't know what a riot was.
On April 4th, 1968, Vanessa Lawson Dixon was 13. She says her 15-year-old brother, Vincent, was among the looters roaming the streets.
At 8th and H Street Northeast, right around the corner from my grandmother's house and right around the corner from where we actually grew up. And he went missing.
The family hired a private investigator, searched the streets lined with boarded up buildings themselves, but Vincent could not be found.
My mom was grieving. My dad was grieving. My brothers were grieving. I was grieving. He was my best friend. We grew up together, like two peas in a pod.
More than 3 years went by until a construction worker made a discovery at the burned out Morton's department store on H Street Northeast. They were Vincent's remains, a victim, perhaps, of smoke inhalation.
I don't know. I'm trying to make myself believe that he died quickly and that he was up there trying to get away from the police or he was trying to get away from the smoke.
If this world were mine, I would place at your feet.
Today, this Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell song makes Vanessa Lawson Dixon think of Vincent. But 50 years later, anger still simmers toward a city she feels let her big brother down by not doing more to find him.
I finally want the right people to hear me this time because my dad passed 2 years ago yesterday. And he told me that he wanted me to get to the bottom of it because there were so many things that wasn't done properly, so many questions that left unanswered. And that nobody was ever held accountable for it.
If this world were mine,
in my next report.
Well, burned victims are hard. They're hard to identify.
What may be the biggest remaining mysteries of the 1968 riots? With WTOP.com writer-producer Jack Moore, Brennan Hazelton.
Smartphones and social media have opened up the world, but it's also made it easier for online predators to send and receive child pornography, and for the child victims themselves to produce it even against their will. Part two of our series, Preventing Online Predators, takes a closer look at the challenges police are facing now.
In an era filled with smartphones,
it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much to get pictures.
And online predators have moved beyond chat rooms to the social media apps that you know and some you don't, in their quest to get their hands on pictures of little kids.
It's not difficult for your child to get online and be a victim.
These predators will charm, manipulate, and if that doesn't work, they escalate.
I will destroy your life. I will text your family. I will Facebook your friends.
Sextortion is one term often used to describe this sort of thing, but predators view it as a modern way to get their hands on child pornography. Because he spends so much time talking to so many creeps, this detective doesn't want his real name used. And as I sat with him, his smartphone kept buzzing. New messages coming in from a guy on his radar, someone claiming to be from Virginia. It started friendly, but then quickly turned sexual.
So I did exactly what any kid would say, is you're being really annoying right now. And he got upset about that.
That's when the guy on the other end of the phone threatened to post this supposed 13-year-old girl's pictures on a porn site. And minutes later, he claimed that he did.
Which I know they're not, because I didn't send him any new pictures, clearly.
But this is where difficulties can start to emerge. Police say that in some cases,
even though there's no pictures, we have quite often the kids will actually still send the pictures because they're being threatened and they're scared and the person's very aggressive.
Lieutenant Jane Burns supervises the Child Exploitation and Human Trafficking Unit with Fairfax County Police.
As young as 8, 9, 10 years old. You know, it's not hard to scare them.
I go back, what do you need from me to have this stop? What I do? Why are you doing this to him? And he goes, I want your nude pictures. And it goes into explicit detail about what specifically he wants. And I kept saying, please don't do this. I'm 13. Why are you doing this to me?
And how much did that matter?
He kind of demanded how I go take the picture.
The bad guys could persist for days or weeks even, maintaining their lies and tricking little kids.
Because they believe that this is going to happen.
However, there are some cases where
they do have older pictures that they found from them. It might be a known person that they might have somehow gotten that picture. And they turn around and say, if you don't send me more pictures, then this picture is going to get submit to your family.
And you read the messages that are being sent to a 10-year-old, and the child is just begging, like, please, you know, don't do that.
Lieutenant Burns is talking about a real case with a 10-year-old from the county.
You can just see the emotion of her pleading, please stop.
As the threats against family mounted,
this person's really just guessing whether or not they have a sibling. You know, don't hurt my dad. Well, you know, we all have dads, so it was safe for him to assume that if I threaten to hurt her dad.
Coming up tomorrow, the difficulties that police face. John Doman, WTOP News.
Russian internet trolls are not a new thing, but their objectives are still not clear. As we continue our series, Tale of a Troll, a former troll helps expose their disturbing impact on Americans.
When 43-year-old Marat Mindyarov walked into what we now know is the Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg, Russia, he was motivated by three elements.
Well, because I was unemployed, first. Second, it was next to my house. And third, I was curious what's going on inside of this building.
Many people were curious.
We did a 10-minute segment about essentially Russian media, and part of that was the Troll Factory in St. Petersburg. And we talked to Murat, obviously, because he worked there.
Zach Fannin, a PBS NewsHour videographer, introduced us to Murat.
Murat is a guy who just needed a job, and the job was pretty easy to do. And Murat had told us that just a lot of the people that worked there didn't think too deeply about what they were doing. They just went ahead and did it for a paycheck.
But it had a damaging effect on the U.S. population.
Well, when you are writing that the white is black and the black is white, yeah, it's the same, like Orwell wrote.
What the troll operation was out to do was to simply make Americans think and talk about the things they wanted us to talk and think about.
When you look at any 5-minute
randomly selected stretch of time on MSNBC or CNN or other cable news stations in the United States, and people are talking about a Russian information operation. That's a framing that's been encouraged by Russian messaging.
David Kilcullen, information warfare expert. That is essentially what Marat and his comrades were doing at the Internet Research Agency. And coming up in our next segment.
It was two shifts by 12 hours. I started at 9 a.m. and finished at 9 p.m.
Life on the inside of the Troll House. J.J. Green, WTOP News.
Middleburg, Virginia, of course, is known for its horses, wineries, charming little shops. But alongside all of that is a music therapy center that's helping toddlers, teens, and adults all find their voice.
Inside a small office building in Middleburg, Virginia, Tom Schweitzer helps people recover from abuse, anxiety, trauma, and more.
Take a big breath in here.
All using music.
Somewhere, breathe. Over the rainbow, breathe.
Music therapy is an evidence-based clinical modality that uses music in whatever portal formation you need to help a human being.
Schweitzer is the executive director of A Place to Be, which he co-founded 8 years ago.
We help people face, navigate, and overcome life's challenges through the therapeutic arts.
At A Place to Be, Schweitzer and his team of therapists help stroke victims regain their speech and strengthen their breathing.
So this is a note, and I might say take a breath in, and they're doing this. And that's all they can last. You know, within 3 or 4 months, we might want to lengthen this to.
And they also help children with disabilities.
I think the youngest we have this year is a 3-year-old who has Down syndrome. When you have Down syndrome, the formation and the strength of the muscles around the mouth and the tongue, it's weak. So we're in kazoo therapy, we're singing songs that they love to see what we can do to build the muscles. You listen to the beat.
There are even group sessions for teens, many of whom are battling depression, anxiety, and bullying. Schweitzer has found that drum circles work best with this crowd.
So for a lot of teenagers, that works better than trying to talk. You know, and then what happens is they're enjoying in this moment where they're all kind of making some loud, funky, fun music. Usually sprouting from that is laughter. And then we're in a different place. Then we can go for something different clinically or, therapeutically.
Last fall, a film called Music Got Me Here, which documents the journey of Schweitzer and one of his clients, Forrest Allen, was screened at the Middleburg Film Festival. After a snowboarding accident, the then 18-year-old Allen was left unable to move or speak, but music helped him find his voice.
That is probably one of the most profound moments of music therapy I have ever experienced. Forrest is really a miracle, and watching somebody throughout 6.5 years from being in a coma for months to being this person who goes into schools and inspires and motivates people and reminds them to wear their helmet. One of the greatest things I think about music therapy is it disguises sometimes just therapy, and it also brings a person to an authentic place. So the best therapy you can do, no matter what it is, you need to be okay with where you are in that moment. And sometimes you have to open yourself up. And music does that for us all the time.
Rachel Nania, WTOP News.
Tiny Tangier Island, Virginia, is disappearing into the Chesapeake Bay. And scientists say climate change is the main reason. But most people who live there don't believe it's a man-made problem. Many do believe God is looking out for them.
Here's WTOP's Michelle Bash with part 3 of her on-air and podcast series, Going Under, the story of Tangier Island.
Tangier's watermen haul in loads of crabs, and the island also has lots of cats. Many roam the island, and 4 live at a crab shanty belonging to Tangier's mayor, who goes by the nickname Uker.
It's a conservative group.
2 are named after Supreme Court justices.
Especially the gray when Sam Alito, he goes crabbing with me some days when it's nice and loves to ride on the boat. Very, very good swimmers. They go overboard occasionally, accidentally, but they climb right back up to piling.
A sign on Uker's shack reads, "We believe Jesus."
Tangier is a spiritual island, and Of course, we're dependent on God for our health and for the resources that he provides. You have a lot of Christians on the island. Over the years, without a seawall, God has protected Tangier.
Earl Swift is the author of the recently published book, Chesapeake Requiem, A Year with the Watermen of Vanishing Tangier Island. He says it wasn't that long ago that everyone on Tangier was church-going.
And the churches still exert a great deal of influence over island life. Tremendous amount, far greater, I think, than virtually you'll find in most any community outside of Utah.
I attended services at both of Tangier's churches and heard the expected readings from Scripture, but I also heard personal stories and humor. Nona Allen is the pastor of Swain Memorial United Methodist Church.
Some young lady stopped me on the island. I have no clue who she was, but she stopped to tell me about somebody that's having a baby. So somebody on the island is having a baby, praise the Lord. And we're happy about that. And it looked like things were going good. They were planning a bridal, a wedding, shucks, baby shower.
At New Testament Church, Elder Dwayne Crockett had the potential threat from Hurricane Florence on his mind when he said,
"The Lord encouraged me this morning in something. And it was from the story when Abraham pled with the Lord concerning the destruction of Sodom. And this, it came to my mind this morning, shall the Lord destroy Tangier for the sake of 10 righteous people? And the Lord said, no, I shall not destroy it."
Search Going Under at WTOP.com to download the full podcast series and check out an interactive map of the island. Michelle Bash, WTOP News.
On this date, 20 years ago, 76 million people tuned in to watch the finale of Seinfeld. Well, today we're taking a look back at a show voted the best written TV sitcom of all time.
Hello!
2 decades after it left the air, Seinfeld remains ubiquitous in our pop culture.
Nothing for you!
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Newman.
Not only did it present 4 inextricable characters in Jerry.
But I don't want to be a pirate!
Elaine.
Come on!
George.
A George divided against itself cannot stand.
And Kramer.
You kept making all the stops?
Well, people kept ringing the bell.
It changed the very way that we speak.
She had man hands.
She's a two-faced man. She's got the Jimmy legs. She eats her peas one at a time.
She's one of these low talkers?
You know, because he's a high talker.
He's a male bimbo. He's a bimbo.
But more than catchphrases, it was the way that Larry David and team took 4 seemingly unrelated storylines and always tied them together.
At that moment, I was a marine biologist, so I reached my hand in, pulled out the obstruction.
What is that, a Titleist?
What delay industries?
No! Delay!
And you want to be my latex cell.
It also daringly took on social issues like civil rights.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Religion.
A Festivus for the rest of us.
I have a suspicion that he's converted to Judaism purely for the jokes.
And this offends you as a Jewish person?
No, it offends me as a comedian.
And sex.
Are you still master of your domain?
I was at the pool!
They're real, oh. And they're spectacular.
Oh! Dolores!
And while certain bits are definitely of their time,
why don't you just tell me the name of the movie you selected?
The show holds up because it dissected everyday life.
See, you know how to take the reservation, you just don't know how to hold the reservation. Anybody can just take them.
Which is why the phrase, a show about nothing, is actually a misnomer. Seinfeld was a show about everything.
So we go into NBC, we tell them we got an idea for a show about nothing.
Exactly.
I think you may have something here.
Join our Seinfeld memories on WTOP.com's entertainment page. I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley.
I cannot stop laughing.
20 years later, still doing it. It's still great.
Oh, so good.
Tonight on Core Values, Chris weighs in on the Red Hen incident in Lexington, Virginia.
Here's what I learned over the weekend. Apparently, it's legal, at least in some places, to deny customer service if you disagree with their politics. You can't deny because of race or sexual orientation, but if you don't like their politics or the politics of their boss, you can toss them out of your establishment. I'm talking, of course, about Sarah Sanders being asked to leave a restaurant in Lexington, Virginia on Friday. Mrs. Sanders has, I think, think, the worst job in Washington. Every day, she speaks to the press about the administration, knowing that before she gets back to her office, her boss might have changed his mind about something, and it's her job to explain. So here she is on her free time trying to have dinner with friends, and she's kicked out of the place they choose to eat. She handled it with more grace than most of us would. But the question is this the kind of country we want? Should we have separate restaurants for Democrats and Republicans? Our country's motto is E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. And it's a core value.
It is 76 degrees now in Northwest.
From Richmond to Baltimore, from the Chesapeake to the Shenandoah, this is WTOP, Washington's top news, on air and online at WTOP.com.
Good morning, I'm Joan Jones.
And I'm Bruce Allen. We have Mike Jakaitis at the editor's desk coming up.
Charges have been filed against the man accused in the shooting at the Capitol Gazette in Annapolis. I'm John Doman.
The shooting suspect carried a grudge against the Capitol Gazette for years. I'm Nick Iannelli.
Metro extends hours for the All-Star Game at Nats Park. I'm Max Smith.
Going underground for a look at some river-saving tunnels. I'm John Aaron.
The Nationals start off in Philadelphia with a loss.
WTOP News Time, 8:31.
Well, the suspect in the Capitol Gazette newspaper shootings is set to make a court appearance this morning as we wait for police to reveal more about what they have learned.
Jared Ramos of Laurel is expected to appear via a video conference hookup for a bond hearing in Anne Arundel County Court today. Ramos is charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder.
We've entered the investigative phase, which takes a very long time.
Lieutenant Ryan Frazier with Anne Arundel County Police says detectives are back inside the building with a mountain of evidence to sort through.
We have our investigators in there that are processing the crime scene. There's a lot of forensic evidence, video evidence, witness statements. We got to put all those pieces of the puzzle together today.
The building will remain closed indefinitely, though police say they understand other businesses are there, and they'll try to work as quickly as possible to get it back open again. The Capitol Gazette staff, meanwhile, still managed to put out their paper today, as promised. In Annapolis, John Doman, WTOP News.
I'm Nick Iannelli outside the suspect's apartment in Laurel. The bitter history between Jared Ramos and the Capitol Gazette stretches back years. In 2011, the paper wrote an article detailing a criminal case against him after he pleaded guilty to harassing a woman online. That led to Ramos suing the paper for defamation, a case that lasted until 2015 when he ultimately lost. Throughout the years, he's railed against the Capitol Gazette on the internet using his Twitter account. Moments before the shooting, he tweeted, "F you. Leave me alone." In Laurel, Nick Iannelli, WTOP News.
And this morning we're learning more about the 5 people who were killed as they did their jobs in Annapolis yesterday.
Rebecca Smith had recently been hired by the Capitol Gazette as a sales assistant. Reporter John McNamara is being remembered for his flexibility in 24 years covering sports and general assignment reporting. He was known for his razor-sharp wit. Reporter Wendy Winters wrote about people in the area. Gerald Fishman was an editorial writer. House Speaker Michael Bush called him well-respected and able to capture the feelings within the community. And editor Rob Hyacin was known for his devotion to journalism and the people who practiced it. A colleague called him a philosopher and poet, coach and a mentor. Neil Augenstein, WTOP News.
Now, Maryland lawmakers are reacting to those shootings. WTOP's Capitol Hill correspondent Dave McConnell has more.
Maryland Senator Ben Cardin declares it's heartbreaking to see this carnage at a local newspaper considered a treasure in the Annapolis community. Without drawing any conclusions yet, Senator Cardin does admit, in these polarized times, journalists face new dangers.
We do know that there is hostilities in this field. We don't know the specifics of what happened in Annapolis, but we do know that it is a risky business today to be an investigative reporter.
Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen says journalists shouldn't have to fend off bullets in the newsroom while doing their jobs. And Congressman John Sarbanes, whose district includes Annapolis, pays tribute to courageous action by first responders in dealing with a deadly situation. On Capitol Hill, Dave McConnell, WTOP News.
Maryland's other U.S. senator is also passing along his condolences. Chris Van Hollen praised the work of the reporters at the Capitol Gazette, saying they worked tirelessly to cover Anne Arundel County and Maryland State House.
These are reporters who work late into the night trying to gather the news for the rest of us, and now they are, in fact, themselves the news in this terrible tragedy.
And the Naval Academy in Annapolis also tweeted condolences, saying The Capital Gazette is our local newspaper and is often the first to tell our story. We're grieving with their staff and loved ones after the tragic events that occurred.
8:35 here at WTOP and some other news today. A Brazilian mother and her 9-year-old son have been reunited after being separated at the U.S.-Mexico border.
Shortly after a federal judge in Chicago issued his order, Lydia Karine Souza was back with her son Diogo, ending a months-long separation since they crossed the southern border. She had applied for asylum. He was sent to a shelter in Chicago. Her lawyer, Britt Miller, telling reporters,
after over almost a month, this family has finally been reunited. We are ecstatic with the court's decision. We think the judge gave it a lot of thought.
The White House is under increasing pressure to bring families back together after another judge ordered federal officials to do so in 30 days for many of the parents and children. I'm Tim McGuire.
Big progress being made on a very polluted waterway thanks to some big new tunnels. The job of those tunnels is to hold and move the nasty combination of sanitary waste and stormwater that for a long time has been overflowing into the Anacostia River when it rains.
I'm here by RFK Stadium near the DC water facility. I'm standing in between a bunch of big cranes and an absolutely enormous drilling machine that's about to go into service. There's a crane with this cage on a wire, and that's going to lower us, we're told, 100 feet below the surface. We are descending and rotating, and stuff is clanking around below us. So we're at the bottom of the drop shaft. You can see a gigantic hole where it looks like the tunneling machine is going to get to work.
It'll dig for 5 miles to R Street. DC Water says another just-opened tunnel that passes by here is already proving to be very effective at preventing untreated sewage from going into the Anacostia. In the district, John Aaron, WTOP News.
8:37.
WTOP.
It's 8:38.
Traffic and weather on the 8s and when it breaks.
All right, still looking pretty good in Maryland, riding out of Annapolis, riding west on 50 through Bowie, headed into the district northeast. You will find we've got a little bit of a delay on the outer loop of the Beltway approaching 202. Inner loop delays, St. Barnabas Road down to the Wilson Bridge, outer loop topside, New Hampshire to Georgia, then around Old Georgetown Road, riding through the big curve, merging with the spur. Inner loop delays are just into College Park for now. 270 southbound. Expect a delay briefly at 118, then pretty solid from Shady Grove, headed south toward Montrose Road. We'd had some major delays trying to roll into Maryland on I-81 northbound. Up near exit 1, you've got about a mile's worth of emergency road work. Only the left lane is getting by. In Upper Marlboro, 301 northbound after Trade Zone Avenue, the accident up at Queen Anne Road blocked the left lane. Riding toward Baltimore through Howard County, I-70 east, you've got a slowdown approaching 29, then slow again after 29 to a point just after the Patapsco River Bridge, broken down vehicle in the middle of the roadway. In northwest, MacArthur Boulevard at Loughborough Road, malfunctioning traffic signals again this morning. Use caution. In Virginia, 95 south, we've got delays in Woodbridge as you come across the Occoquan toward the Prince William Parkway. Moving out of Dale City, riding south toward Dumfries, you're slow. We also had a northbound delay coming from the Centerport Parkway into Stafford, and you'll find a just a little heavy traffic again in Lorton. 395, most of your delay right there in Landmark, Duke Street to King, then again near Washington Boulevard toward the inbound 14th. Out in Ashburn, 7 east after Lansdowne Boulevard, the crash. In Leesburg, Belmont Ridge Road remains closed between Route 7 and Riverside Parkway from yesterday's down pole and wires, the continuation of the emergency utility work. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
Expect temperatures to be heating up as we go through your Friday. Sunny skies throughout the day, staying dry with a high of 93 degrees. Overnight tonight, we do stay dry, clear skies, lows in the mid-70s. For Saturday, it'll be sunny, hot, humid, high of 96, feeling like 100. Sunday will be sunny, hot, and humid, high of 99, feeling like 105. I'm Storm Team 4 meteorologist Sheena Parveen.
Right now, 75 degrees at Reagan National, and it's 77 in Northwest outside the glass-enclosed nerve center.
8:41. The front page of a Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland this morning shows photos of the 5 people gunned down and killed Thursday afternoon. Police say the man who carried out the shooting had a history of social media threats against the paper after it reported the case of him stalking an ex-girlfriend in 2011. Tom Marquard is the former editor at the Capital Gazette, says that Ramos had threatened him in the past.
I doubt that he was looking for me when he came in that door, but he was certainly looking to retaliate against the editors whose job it was to do much the same thing. And that's what's so tragic about this. The people who died didn't know who he was or even what his case was.
ABC's Kenneth Moten in Annapolis with more on how the story is being covered.
The Gazette's sister paper, the Baltimore Sun, wrote tributes to the victims. Gerald Fishman,
Rob Hyacin, John McNamara, Rebecca Smith, and Wendy Winters.
Jared Ramos has been charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
And joining us live on Skype now is WTOP's national security correspondent, J.J. Green. J.J., given this shooting at the Capitol Gazette, it's changed the calculus the media organizations are making about their own security.
That's right, Bruce. And first of all, condolences to the families and colleagues who died in that shooting, and a speedy recovery for those who were injured. But it does change the calculus because it's a chilling situation. And it points out very clearly that no organization is too small to be attacked. And what it means here is it's a reminder that it can happen. And media organizations, security organizations for them have stepped up what they're doing because they're concerned about copycats and others who might engage in this type of behavior, and it's something that absolutely has to happen at this point.
So what are the changes that need to be made?
Well, it does not mean, according to the security and intelligence people I've spoken to about this, it doesn't mean knee-jerk heavy security, but thoughtful improvements that any media organization can do, like cameras and extra vigilance on ground floor locations and physical security presences and motion sensors. But most of all, they say it means if you do see or notice something strange, you need to tell somebody about it.
I guess there's a real concern about copycats.
That's right. You know, the pictures and videos and inflammatory words that we often see on social media and in traditional media these days, it's been proven to trigger or initiate situations with people who might be vulnerable to doing something like this. And, you know, it doesn't mean micromanaging news products or getting into heated debates about how to deal with it. It just means taking, according to the folks that I've spoken to again, taking thoughtful actions to deal with the situations to better secure journalistic organizations and the public at large.
Yeah, it is a new day. J.J. Green, our national security correspondent, appreciate you being here this morning.
Thank you.
8:44 now.
Sports at 15 and 45, brought to you by your local Honda dealer. Don't settle for less than a Honda.
All right, Dave, not such a hot start for the Nats in Philly.
Well, let's hope nothing rhymes with July, because it's really a June swoon right now. It certainly feels that way. Nationals 4-3 loss in Phillies. They've lost 10 of 13 games. Manager Davey Martinez, maybe it's time for one of those meetings.
You know, I've talked to them individually, all of them. They get it. They understand. And we're going to snap out of this. We really are. I mean, it's just a matter of time. But I want them to keep pushing. I want them to keep going and play with energy.
Mariners beat the Orioles 4-2. Capitals have reportedly re-signed defenseman Michael Kempney to a multi-year contract. Andrew Landry and J.J. Spawn had their first round lead at the Quicken Loans Nationals, 7-under par. In fact, J.J. Spawn just teeing off this morning at 8:30. Tiger Woods at even par 70.
No, I hit good putts. They just didn't go in, which is fine. And I don't mind that at all. I misread 2 putts on the back nine, so be it. But I hit a lot of good putts today on my line with the speed I wanted, so they didn't go in.
And that's the difference.
But I haven't done that in a while.
Right.
I haven't been doing that. So that's a positive sign. Just keep doing that. Eventually, they'll start rolling in.
And Tiger Woods' second round is now underway. Daily Mail of England noted Wayne Rooney arrived to rapturous reception. He's talking about loud cheering fans at Dulles Airport, where General Manager Dave Casper was.
This is spectacular. We appreciate all the fans coming out. This is a big signing and big moment in the history of DC United, and we're excited to open up Audi Field in 2 weeks from Saturday.
What did Wayne say to you? What was the discussion when he got off the plane?
I asked him. I thought you'd have more suitcases. He had 10. I thought he had 20. So, but he's pretty excited to be here.
Those baggage fees, the airlines charge, it drives you crazy if you're Wayne Rooney. DC United on the road tomorrow against New England. Elena Deladon, three-pointer at the buzzer. Mystics beat New York 80-77. Oregon State shut out Arkansas 5-0 to win the College World Series. Dave Johnson, WTOP Sports.
Straight ahead, gearing up for Major League Baseball's All-Star Game, coming to DC in about 2.5 weeks now. It's 8:47.
It's 8:48.
Traffic and weather on the 8s and when it breaks.
In Ashburn, Route 7 East after Lansdowne Boulevard, the accident activity is cleared and the delays are easing. Careful out on Duke Street, moving westbound after Telegraph Road. Last seen, the accident blocked the left lane. In Leesburg, Belmont Ridge Road closed again this morning between Route 7 and Riverside Parkway. The continued emergency utility work ongoing. You'll find in Fairfax, eastbound Main Street, 236 before Stonewall Avenue. That accident activity last seen was blocking the right lane. We've got delays in Virginia, Ride 95. I-5, mainly northbound as you come out of Falmouth headed towards Stafford. The rest of your delay briefly in Lorton. There's a southbound slowdown, though, crossing the Occoquan, moving through Dale City, moving south toward Dumfries. Nothing there reported in your way. 395, we've got a slowdown around Seminary to King Street, then again up near Washington Boulevard toward the inbound 14th Street Bridge. Expect delays on the southbound GW Parkway as you get south toward the Memorial Bridge to come inbound on the 14th. The freeway west had been delayed, trying to leave the 11th Street Bridge, headed toward the outbound 14th. Nothing there reported in your way. Maryland, top side of the Beltway Outer Loop, slowed New Hampshire to Georgia, then Old Georgetown Road, riding through the big curve down toward River Road. We had 301 northbound and Upper Marlboro after Trade Zone near Queen Anne Road. The crash had been in the left lane. Moving from Howard into Baltimore County on 70 eastbound after the Patapsco River, had a broken down vehicle blocking the center lane. Riding into Maryland, I-81 northbound up near Exit 1 for about a mile, there's emergency road work in Washington County, has only the left lane getting by. You'll find in Northwest, had issues along MacArthur Boulevard at Loughborough Road in the intersection because of malfunctioning traffic lights. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
Our Storm Team 4 four-day forecast. Chuck Bell, still pretty nice out there this morning.
Not a bad day at all. A bright blue sky overhead. Temperatures are in the mid-70s across most of the area now. 76 degrees in beautiful Washington. 76 in Gaithersburg. Already 81 in Frederick, Maryland. That's the warmest location on the map. Still 66 in Oakland, Maryland, but that's way out by Deer Creek Lake. That's the cool spot. Afternoon highs today will be in the upper 80s and low 90s, and the humidity isn't going to be too all that intolerable for today. That will begin to change as we go through the weekend. High pressure to our west will keep a bit of a northwesterly wind today. That's the reason we get one last little break before the humidity starts to build. But as that area of high pressure moves offshore, our winds become southwesterly, and you don't want the air to come from the deep south at this time of the year. Highs tomorrow will be in the mid-90s with heat indexes near 100. Temperatures themselves without the heat index will be up close to 100 degrees on Sunday and Monday. Sunday and Monday heat indexes nearing in on 105. If you are beachbound, it'll still be in the upper 80s to near 90 this weekend, but next week should be a slit a bit cooler than that, a little bit of a heat vacation only in the upper 80s. I'm Storm Team 4, meteorologist Chuck Bell for WTOP.
All right, Chuck, thank you so much. 8:52 now, and recapping the latest that we have here on the shootings targeting Maryland's Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis. Jared Ramos has been charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder in the killings inside the newspaper's office. Ramos is scheduled for a bail hearing at 10:30 this morning in Annapolis.
In other news this morning, word from Metro that the system will stay open late for the Major League Baseball All-Star Game coming to Nationals Park next month.
Trains will run at least an hour past Metro's usual 11:30 weeknight closing time for the Home Run Derby Monday, July 16th, and the All-Star Game July 17th. If either runs past midnight or so, Metro promises to keep trains going another 30 minutes after the game or derby ends. Metro says it has a partnership with Major League Baseball and All-Star Game sponsor MasterCard. Not clear if the usual $100,000 deposit has been paid or required. Metro plans to skip any track work that would impact riders on the days of All-Star Game festivities. The following weekend, though, a 6-week, 24/7 red line shutdown begins in the district. Max Smith, WTOP News.
This is Christy King on Half Street Southeast, where Major League Baseball is saying, come on down.
To almost an entire week of fan-friendly activities.
Most events are ticketed, such as the Home Run Derby and All-Star Game, but interactive stuff for kids in Yards Park are free Friday the 13th through the 17th, and there's a cheaper way to get into FanFest, says MLB's Marla Miller.
Fans who ride Metro can purchase a $20 ticket.
To get alerts from the city, text DC Sports to 888-777. No words yet about city street closures. Christy King, WTOP News.
For the first time, a robot with true artificial intelligence is about to invade space. The round head of a robot named Simon, that's C-I-M-O-N, is part of SpaceX's latest delivery to the International Space Station that launched earlier this morning. A German astronaut will introduce the robot, which is a German experiment, to space life, and Simon will help astronauts with research projects.
Just ahead here in Your Money, the good-paying jobs that don't need a college degree. 8:54.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance.
Your Money at 25 and 55 on WTOP.
Futures looking pretty good so far. Dow futures up 106 points right now. S&P futures up 9.25.
A new set of Chinese tariffs on U.S. seafood, including items made from shark fins, could jeopardize what remains of the industry for the controversial products. The U.S. has long banned shark finning, a process that removes the fin from a shark and discards the animal at sea.
Career Builder is out with a list of well-paying jobs that don't need a college degree where demand is high. Electrician tops the list with a job growth rate of 11% and an average pay of $55,000 a year. Plumbers are a close second. Others include chefs and cooks, fitness trainers, and medical records technicians.
No more Lyft stickers in car windows. Jeff Claybaugh says it's a light now that will show you your Lyft ride.
Lyft has rolled out what it calls Lyft Amp in the D.C. area. They are big, bright LED light bars mounted on dashboards. They say Lyft, and they change color. The color displayed matches the color that shows up on your Lyft app, so you know it's for you.
Now, Lyft Amp is also filling the inside of a car with what Lyft calls ambient mood lighting.
What if you don't want ambient mood lighting? It's 8:56.